David, how would you define metabolomics?
So metabolomics is a mouthful, and it's really a combination of the words metabolism and genomics. And you put in metabolomics is really meaning that we're studying lots and lots of different metabolites, which are the parts that we see in metabolism. And the word omics is sort of the thing that we attach to anything where it's high throughput. So there's genomics, proteomics, and now metabolomics. So looking at lots of metabolites and characterizing them in organisms and in cells and tissues and in the environment.
You've been working in this area for quite a number of years. How long would you say?
Well, we first probably got started in 1999. And this is actually before the field even had a name. So we weren't really quite sure what to call it. And for a number of years, we were going back and forth with our own names. We called it chemical genomics or kenomics. We came up with metabonomics, metabolomics. But eventually it settled on the name. And so, yeah, it's almost 17, 18 years that we've been working on this.
What would you consider some of the milestones along the way over the last, almost two decades, as you say?
Yeah, well, I think one milestone was getting a good name for it, metabolomics. But I think over the last little while, we got involved in what was called the Human Metabolome Project that was launched in 2005. And it's still ongoing. And that's a project not unlike the Human Genome Project. The Human Genome Project, I think everyone's heard of. And that was what we did to characterize the human DNA sequences of the human genome. The Human Metabolome Project is really a homegrown project for Alberta, and it was to look at all the metabolites in the human body. And we started that in 2005, 2006, and we had about 10 or 15 investigators at the University of Alberta, University of Calgary, working on the project over a number of years. It's still ongoing. Another milestone was the establishment of the Metabolomics Innovation Centre in 2011, and that is now Canada's National Metabolomics Laboratory, and it involves several scientists and several labs at the University of Alberta, as well as labs in Victoria, and soon labs in McGill and in McMaster University. So that's building out a network of metabolomics centres in Canada to give people more access. And then I think there's been some really exciting discoveries and developments over the last few years, the launch of several metabolomics companies, partly from TMIC, one company called Kenomics, another company called Omics Analytics, another company called Molecular U, and then related companies called Metabolomics Technologies, Inc., or MTI, Metabolistics, and elsewhere. So there's lots of things that have grown or emerged from this initiative over the last 18 years.
So really, the genesis of this was looking at human health and the relationship of metabolites to that. It's really broadened out. What are some of the areas now where it's being used?
So yeah, it's gone from humans to animals, and in many respects it's gone into things like agriculture, food applications. So we're looking at beef and dairy cattle, we're looking at sheep, pigs, we're also moving into crops and crop science and analyzing food composition, the environment, looking at what's out there in the water, what's out there in the soil, what's settling on our food, what we accidentally or deliberately ingest. It's also moved into the area of drugs, which are relevant to obviously animals and humans. And I think another area which we call is the exposome, or the exposures that we see. This could include pollution, could include what's accidentally ingested. And it's becoming increasingly important, I think, in terms of human, animal, and plant health as well.
Does that mean that when you look at environmental exposure, that that actually affects or changes a human being or even changes your genome?
It does. Another term that people often use is epigenetics or epigenomics, which is really another word of saying how the environment affects the genome. And yeah, what you are exposed to, whether it's chemicals or radiation, will affect, in some cases, the DNA. It'll affect the actions of cells, of tissues and organs. They accumulate. I mean, there's lots of information we have about the accumulation of lead or mercury in fish and in humans and in birds. But there's many, many other compounds. Bisphenol A, BPA, is another example of a synthetic chemical that affects human fertility and animal fertility and fish fertility. And there's literally tens of thousands of compounds, man-made or semi-synthetic, that are in the environment. And these actually end up in us.
So you've received quite a bit of funding over the last few weeks, a number of different announcements. I don't even know where to begin. So perhaps what I'll do is I'll start with the Genome Alberta project that you're doing with chronic wasting disease. How much did you get and what are you going to do?
Yes, this is it's a large-scale research project in chronic wasting disease. And the grant is several million dollars. I don't know the exact numbers, actually. So this is a project that's being led by Debbie McKenzie and by a number of people across Alberta, trying to identify markers, both environmental detectable markers in deer droppings, to track the progression and development of chronic wasting disease. And so metabolomics is being used to help with the identification of these markers. We'll also be applying things like proteomics to see if we can measure these. And the hope is to have a better understanding of how the disease is spreading through the deer ungulate populations, perhaps better ways of controlling it, preventing it from spreading perhaps into the parks or into the mountains or across the mountains into BC. There's another project that was also funded by Genome Canada called the Resilient Forests, or the RESFOR project. That's about a $5 million project, and that's also using metabolomics to characterize the effects of pests and environment and drought on trees and their stability, and to try and breed for more drought-tolerant and pest-tolerant spruce and pine. Now, these are projects where there's many, many investigators, and metabolomics is a portion of those, but it is playing an important role in these projects.
So with the resilient forest, for example, what do you do? Like, how do you map the metabolites in trees?
Yeah, the trees are a little more challenging, but there's a lot of information both in the leaves and in the sap of trees. That's the blood, if you wish, for trees. And there are various methods for extracting metabolites from either sap or from leaves or pine needles and spruce needles. And there are even techniques for extracting some metabolites from bark and wood. It's a different challenge. It's a little more challenging, in fact, than, say, doing metabolomics of blood or urine or of food, which is what we normally do. But in this case, plants are incredibly adept at producing very different chemicals. And plants, because they can't run away from threats, actually have to develop an arsenal of chemicals to wage chemical warfare to fight off pests or to survive drought or to survive cold. And we wanted to learn a lot more about those chemical shields that plants produce, and to understand how to help them produce more of them if they have to fight off insect pests or drought or cold conditions.
And just going back to the chronic wasting disease project, you said that you would be dealing with deer droppings?
That's right. The reason why we decided to look at deer droppings is because currently the only way we can track or monitor the prevalence and incidence of chronic wasting disease in deer is to actually capture or kill deer and to dissect them and look at the presence of prions in their brains. So that's a very expensive process, and it's very hard to find deer because they're pretty good at hiding. But if anyone's ever gone for a walk in the woods, on any path, you'll often see lots of deer droppings. If you go to salt licks, you'll see lots of deer droppings. And deer droppings persist long after deer has left for months and years. So this is a way that you can actually track where deer have been. You can collect them passively or without a whole lot of effort and map where they're located, hopefully assess the presence of either prions or prion-like markers in the deer droppings in there, therefore map the presence or lack of presence of chronic wasting disease in certain regions in Alberta. We know roughly where chronic wasting disease is. we can currently track where things are in terms of the spread of chronic wasting disease by collecting samples, deer heads, but it is obviously very expensive, and we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars or more over the last number of years collecting these samples and testing the samples. And it's a huge effort that's involved hunters and wildlife biologists, and it would be nice to find something that's more convenient, something that could be perhaps more easily done by perhaps larger numbers of people, sort of this idea of citizen science, where if people collect deer poop and bring it in for testing, that it might allow us to get a much more detailed map of exactly the spread of the disease, how fast it's moving, where it's moving, and ultimately maybe ways of mitigating it.
What will you do with all that information? Do you keep it in a library, or does it even help you identify individual deer?
Well, really what we're interested in is simply identifying positions. So using GPS or geopositioning data to map where there are deer with chronic wasting disease, potentially how many, based on the number of samples that we see in an area, and therefore, to some extent, the density of the disease. So it's the same way that if we were tracking a disease or an outbreak of the flu or Ebola, we'd be trying to map where it's moving, how many people have it in which spots. And so same thing is trying to be done with deer, but obviously we can't talk to the deer and we can't sample the deer. So this is perhaps the best way of doing sort of deer epidemiology.
So when does that get underway?
The project just started. I think the money just arrived in December, early January. We're just hiring staff now, and perhaps with the spring thaw, we'll be out there with collecting samples in the woods to see what we can do. There are many other parts of the project that we're involved in, and we'll be looking at other biofluid samples from captive deer to help get a better understanding. And as I say, we'll be using techniques like genomics and proteomics and metabolomics to help with this process. So it's a very large project with many scientists involved in many aspects of chronic wasting disease, looking at all aspects from the development of the disease to the social effects, social impacts, and newer ways of potentially treating the disease.
I'd like to ask you about the agricultural and livestock work that you're doing. How many projects in that area do you have going?
Well, I think over the last few years, we've probably had half a dozen different projects. Some are winding down, others are picking up. A lot of them have been, as I say, focused in cattle, which is obviously a big industry in Alberta. Some have even been related to prion disease and mad cow disease, but more recently they've been focused on various diseases that cattle get, and also improving the efficiency of growth with cattle and the efficiency of growth with sheep. And again, metabolomics has allowed us to identify a number of chemical or metabolite biomarkers that allow us to even predict, even before the cow or bull is sick, if it's coming down with a particular disorder. And so this gives us a possibility of being able to treat cattle prophylactically before they get sick. And this ultimately might allow us to reduce the amount of antibiotic use and improve the overall life expectancy, especially for dairy cattle, and reduce the costs for veterinary treatment. In the area of feed efficiency, there's lots of other studies that we're doing, again, finding markers that seem to identify cattle and sheep that are very efficient eaters, and that they're able to gain a lot of weight and mass without a whole lot of food. This seems to be something that's not so much purely genetics, but relates to other features about the general metabolism of the animal and its microbial gut influence and things like that.
Just looking at applications where they might impact on consumers, will this work help in terms of tracking or labeling food?
Well, to some extent, there's another project which we've been looking at and have been involved with. It's sort of winding down now, but this is looking at the chemical composition of food crops, fruits, vegetables, grains. And this is partly intended to help with understanding more precisely what's in our food, but also improving the labeling of food. You know, if you look at the side of a cereal box, you might see a dozen vitamins or minerals listed, but any given food has somewhere between 10 and 20,000 different chemicals or nutrients in that. And that's very specific to where it's produced or grown or manufactured. And it's often the lower abundance chemicals that give food their flavor or the aroma, the color. It's the micronutrients that are sometimes responsible for the health effects. And so being able to measure these, identify these things more precisely, hopefully will give consumers and farmers a lot more information about the food they're producing and the food they're consuming.
Who supports these projects, the agricultural ones?
These have been supported by a number of groups, some through Genome Alberta and Genome Canada, some through Alberta Livestock and Meat Association, some through Alberta Innovates, BioSolutions, which is now, I guess, Alberta Innotech, and some of them jointly done through Alberta Innovates Health Solutions as well, relating to food and health. Some have been by smaller organizations involved with sheep producers and farmers and dairy producers and farmers. So it's been a range of mostly Alberta-based funding organizations.
And your most recent announcement of funding has come from the Canada Foundation for Innovation, and that's towards the centre. What will you be able to use that money for?
So that's great. Yeah, I guess earlier in January, we received good news, support from CFI for about $6 million over the next 5 years. That funding actually has to be leveraged with additional funding or matching funding, so that the net amount, we hope, will translate to almost $15 million over the next 5 years. That funding is intended to support both the expansion of the Metabolomics Innovation Center, or TMIC, to several nodes, to improve its performance by adding new equipment, new methods, support for instrument maintenance, operators, chemists, others to help maintain the operation. This particular CFI award is unusual in that it's really not intended to be applied to infrastructure, but really for operations and maintenance. And there's only about a dozen of these that are awarded every 5 or 6 years in Canada. And we're very grateful to be part of that collection of national service organizations that are part of that. So we're very happy about it. It's going to give TMIC, I think, a lot of stability over the next few years. We've been going roughly 1 year to the next, not knowing if we're going to carry on or have funding for the next year. And so getting 5 years of secure, stable funding will make a real difference for us.
If you look down the road for Metabolomics, what do you see coming?
Well, I think Metabolomics continues to grow. What it really is a unique way of being able to measure what's going on in our environment. And for a very, very simple way of getting an assessment of what our phenotype or a plant's phenotype or an animal's phenotype is. It's a chemical readout of what they are. And so I think it's finally dawning on a lot of people that this is very useful information. It's very precise. It can be highly quantitative. And that precision is now moving into the area of what we call precision medicine. And that's one area where I think there's real growth, particularly in metabolomics, which allows people to use the power of metabolomics to track their health status almost on a daily basis. And so there's spin-off companies that are coming out. There are calls for proposals, research activities that have started in the U.S. and Canada, elsewhere around the world, to integrate metabolomics into precision health or precision medicine, and to use the remarkable precision that which we can measure chemicals with, and to help with the interpretation, the diagnosis, prognosis, and prediction of disease or health status in people.
Where would funding for that come from? Alberta Innovates?
So precision medicine initiatives are springing up all over. Genome Canada will be starting out with a precision medicine initiative in the next few months. Alberta Innovates has launched a program for development projects in precision health. Alberta Health Services is also moving towards a precision health strategy. CIHR, Canadian Institutes for Health Research, are also wanting to launch precision health initiatives. All of the provinces across Canada are moving into precision health, and China, the US, the UK have put in billions into precision medicine and precision health. And the idea really here is to start making use of the power of metabolomics, genomics, and proteomics, and translate it to real-world, real-life applications, and to bring it out from the lab and into general practice.
This is really turning into quite an industry, and my understanding is that Edmonton is actually a world hub. And I think you have something to do with that because you're here. Is that correct?
Well, I think it's sort of a coalescence of many things. But the establishment of the Metabolomics Innovation Center has certainly helped that. Prior to that, the Human Metabolome Project also catalyzed a lot of activities. So the result is that Edmonton now houses most of the data resources for metabolomics. All the information about human metabolome is housed here. A lot of software that thousands of researchers use around the world every day is also housed here and was developed here in Edmonton. And a lot of other software, database, and chemical resources are maintained at the University of Alberta that, again, hundreds of people, thousands of people use each month that are involved in metabolomics. At the same time, there's several industries, companies that have grown out of the metabolomics activities. I've mentioned one called Canomics, another one called Metabolistics, another one called Metabolomics Technologies Incorporated, or MTI, Molecular U, Omics Health Analytics. These are all spin-off companies that have emerged over the last 10 or 15 years from the metabolomics activities. So Edmonton hosts more metabolomics companies than any other place in the world. It's launched more, I think. And so, yeah, there is a real hub of metabolomics activity here in Edmonton. It's quite remarkable.
And you're traveling a lot. You just came back from Japan, and I understand you're heading off to Germany. What's happening in Japan?
Oh, in Japan, it was a meeting on the application of nuclear magnetic resonance, or NMR, to a variety of things, including metabolomics. And the next trip to Germany is also relating to metabolomics and food analysis. So yeah, the last year has been a very busy travel time. We're spreading the word, proselytizing about metabolomics, but in many cases people are wanting to learn about what we're doing and the successes we've had and how they can emulate some of those things in other countries. And again, it's sort of just an indication of how much of an impact that metabolomics is having in research in many areas, and how much of an impact I think Alberta homegrown research is having elsewhere around the world.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you, Cheryl.